So the topic of my talk today was at least supposed to be Ruth Gendler's Notes for the Need for Beauty. It's one of the most beautiful books I've ever read. Ruth Gendler is a remarkably creative person. She does the little drawings that illustrate what she's writing about. And she has this whimsical imagination that she brings to what she's expressing that just delights my heart. And when I reread this book earlier in the year, I was just thrilled to revisit it because I had read it years and years ago. And I started once again underlining page after page after page and making notes and realizing that much of it was already underlined. I suppose it's embarrassing to admit, but who knows, I'm willing to be vulnerable in this space, that I didn't discover until Thursday, I think it was, that I actually gave a talk on this book already. But it was 8 years ago. And so on December 9th of 2008, I gave a talk on this book. And it's available on my website. It's available on the study group website. And it includes an absolutely exquisite reading from Ruth Gendler on the beauty of the body that is a separate link that David put up at the time. And so that's my talk on Notes for the Need for Beauty, and if Notes on the Need for Beauty. And if you want more specifically about the book, that's where you can find it. I'm not going to replicate the talk I gave 8 years ago. I used it as a springboard for what I feel like talking about now, almost eight years later, because I've changed in 8 years, and we've all changed in 8 years. And yet this book still hits my heart in a really powerful way. So I'm going to start with a quote from Ruth Gendler. Who gave you your eyes? This is one of my favorite questions, she said. As I take notes on the need for beauty, I want to consider how you see and how I see the world. I can't know how you see the world, so I ask you, who gave you your eyes? Inside this question are several other questions. Who taught you to see? Who taught you what to see? What not to see? What are you paying attention to? What is beautiful to you? We see in the light and in the dark. We see before we can speak. We see with our eyes closed. We see in our dreams. We can see much more than we can ever say. So what she's opening up in this book is, how do we interpret life through our senses? What is the meaning of life? And how do we interpret what we're taking in and put words to it, put meaning to it, have feelings about it, express it, and allow it? How do we interpret the world? And how is our interpretation different from everybody else's interpretation? And my brother was here a few weeks ago, and my brother's idea of beauty is comedy albums. And he and his wife drove to Florida and came back from Florida, all the while listening to comedians, hours and hours of comedians. And so Scott always has a joke about every conceivable subject. And the joke he told me about perception was about imagining a little girl plucking the petals off a daisy and saying, he loves me not. And that's the little girl's perception. And the daisy's perception is, ouch, ouch, ouch. I have an even number of petals. He doesn't love you. Get over it, you know. So we all see things differently. We all see things differently. And how we see is different from how everyone else sees. But if we listen, we can learn from the way other people see. We can learn from the way other people perceive. And so I had a transformative experience this week. I was getting ready to do my singing debut with a friend who plays the guitar and sings harmony and plays the harmonica, and I was really looking forward to singing in public for the first time in years and years. But I noticed that he kept encouraging me to sing more and sing more and sing more, that if I sang more, I'd sing better. And I knew he was right, except that I couldn't bring myself to do it. I practiced the songs we were singing, but I wasn't particularly inspired to practice. And it reminded me of the time when I was bowling, and I got better and better at bowling because I enjoyed practicing. And then I took a golf lesson from a friend of mine who's a golf pro. And when we got done with the lesson, he said, "How did it go?" And I said, "You're terrific, and I'm never going to do it again." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "Because it isn't fun for me to practice this. This isn't fun for me." And so I was singing, but I wasn't inspired to practice. And then on Monday night last week, I was listening to The Voice. I had watched Dancing with the Stars from 8 to 10, and I started listening to The Voice at 10 o'clock, and I was sort of getting through it by 11:30 or so, because I'd been fast-forwarding through the commercials with the DVR. But one of the songs on The Voice totally blew me away. And something that Miley Cyrus said blew me away. And I realized I had been really judgmental about Miley Cyrus, because the only Miley Cyrus experience I had was naked on a wrecking ball, and that was a little much. I didn't understand the context of that particular exposure or expression. But Miley Cyrus was awesome as a coach on The Voice. I really loved what she did with the people that she talked to and talked about. And she expressed herself in the advice she gave to other people. She would say, try it this way, and she would sing it. And all of a sudden, the light would go on for the person who was singing. They would hear differently. So she was giving them ears. She was giving them an understanding of what was possible. And through her expression of her gift, she was giving. But the song that really moved me, she didn't sing. She said, "There is a line in this song that is the best line in any song ever written. I want to tattoo it on my forehead." I thought, I better listen. This must be something. And the line in the song was, "I have no fear. I have only love." And the song is Gypsy by Fleetwood Mac. It was written by Stevie Nicks. And I don't know the whole story specifically. I only know that she says in the song that she was back at the Velvet Underground, back to the floor that I love, to a room with some lace and paper flowers, back to the gypsy that I was, to the gypsy that I was. So she was at a different place in her career. She was going back to a place she had been before and feeling the love that was there. And then she goes on to say the verse or the chorus or whatever the heck it is, I never can tell. She said, "To the gypsy that remains, she faces freedom with a little fear. I have no fear. I have only love. And if I was a child and the child was enough, enough for me to love, enough to love." It's a powerful verse. It is such a powerful group of phrases with so many ideas that just blew me away. And I started to sing it. And it soars. It's high. It's beautiful. It's high. And at midnight on Monday night, I sang that song with Katie Baston is the name of the young woman who was singing the song on The Voice. I sang it over and over again. I must have sung it 6 or 8 songs, rewinding it on my DVR. And it exploded something within me, and I remembered why I love to sing. I love to sing something that soars, that makes me soar, that takes me to that place where I know the fullness of the gift that I've been given in singing, which I wasn't touching with the songs that I had previously been practicing. But it took me to that place. And I thought, if I were practicing this song every day, I could sing a lot every day. And I started thinking about other songs that inspired me, that would inspire me to sing every day, that would make that a driving force. And so I began to feel that expression in myself, what I wanted to express. And I suddenly realized that about 6 weeks ago, I had a series of conversations with various friends and teachers and people and about being more engaged in life, because I tend to hibernate in January and February. I withdraw when the weather gets cold. I don't go outside. I don't get real involved. I sit and cuddle in a blanket with a cup of tea, and I read a lot, and it feels really good, and I just love it. And then there comes a point where I want to re-engage. And so I was thinking about this idea of engagement. What causes me to engage more in my life? And I set out to be more engaged, and I realized that spring engages me more in life, and the blooming of the flowers and the seeing of the beauty all around me. But it wasn't until I heard Katie Baston sing Gypsy, and then I started to sing it, that I really engaged. And all of a sudden, I was blown away by this opportunity to touch life, to touch feelings in a way that I hadn't touched in a long time. She faces freedom with a little fear, Stevie Nicks said, and I realized I was facing my life with a little fear. And when I sang, I have no fear, I have only love, I could feel that. I could feel what it would be like to engage in life with only love. Only love. And then I felt the next lines. And if I was a child, my PhD friend, when I spoke these words to her to tell her my epiphany, she said, if I were a child. And Stevie said, if I was a child, so it's good enough for me. If I was a child, and the child was enough for me to love, enough to love. The child is enough to love. The child can feel loved because that child is enough for me to love. And that child feeling loved can love and break out of whatever it is that's causing that urge to hibernate, to be a little withdrawn. When we're needing rest, it's the perfect thing. When we're needing shelter and ease, it's the perfect thing. And there comes a time when you've had enough rest and you're ready to engage. And it's so exciting. So I began to think, okay, if this is the topic of my talk, this desire to re-engage, to find that place that we feel inspired to give the gifts we've been given, what do I know that brings that out in me? Who has said anything about that? And I know that Ruth Gindler said a lot about that, but that's in the other talk. You can listen to that one. Let me tell you some other people who spoke about this. I remembered a chant, and I've checked with several people who lead chants, and we all know the chant, but we don't know who did the chant originally. So, may the beauty that you are be the beauty that you do. Let the glory of the light shine through. May the beauty that you are be the beauty that you do. Let the glory of the light shine through. So that came up. And then I thought about, at one time, I had a very brief one-month experience of working at a place called Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation. And they had 35 aptitude tests that they gave, because there's not just one kind of intelligence. There's 35 that they had identified in 1979 when I worked for them for a month. I'm sure they have a dozen more now or something. But that was what they'd identified so far. And when they tested people, what they would tell them is, you have these aptitudes. If you use them, life will be easy and you will be successful. If you don't use them, life will be harder and you will feel a sense of resistance within you, because there is something needing to be expressed that hasn't been expressed yet. So that was one of the powerful ideas that I remembered. Another was, do you guys know about the Myers-Briggs inventory, the Kersey inventory, where your tendencies for your personality are identified? And you are an extrovert or an introvert, you're an intuitive or a sentient being, you're a thoughtful being or a feeling person, and you're a process or a judgment person. You like deadlines or you like things to be open. And what Carl Jung said about these qualities that he originally identified, I guess, was that the opposite personality type from the one that you've already explored is your greatest opportunity for growth as an individual in your maturity. So if you've always been intuitive, exploring the senses is a good thing. If you've always been more sensual, exploring the intuitive side of who you are is an opportunity for you. It's not that if you don't do it, you're bad or wrong and you're going to go to hell or there's some negative consequence, but it's an opportunity. And so we have these gifts that we've been given. The way the Beloved says it is that we each have a constellation of gifts and abilities and talents that we've developed. And we have this opportunity to express these gifts. The way Ernest Holmes said it is, we know more light will be given as we use that which we have. And when I teach mysticism, I talk about the idea that each of us tends to learn in the physical through the auditory, the visual, or the kinesthetic, and that we have that same opportunity inside us to learn as a visual mystic, someone who sees visions or symbols, an auditory mystic, someone who hears music or hears the still small voice, someone who feels the presence of God, who knows the divine life in some feeling way. And what I tell people when they tell me, I'm visual but I want to be auditory, or I'm auditory and I want to be kinesthetic, I say, the more you honor the gift you have been given, the more comes. So if you express and experience something and you acknowledge it, for me it was writing it down. When I started writing down my visions, which I was visual, more came. And so we have these six senses we can explore, the way Ruth Gindler explores vision in her book. But we also have clairaudience, clairsentience, clairvoyance, and intuition. And I'm sure that there's many more intuitive expressions as well, ones that I don't yet have words for. But as we use these gifts, whatever our gifts are, if our gift is to fix things, if our gift is to love, if our gift is to plant gardens or knit or make soup or, you know, whatever it is that our gift is, the more we express it, the more it comes. And the more fulfilled we are, the more engaged in life we are, the more expressive we are, the more we allow the creativity that is who we are to be expressed. Ernest Holmes said, he quoted Sidney Lanier, who I've never heard of, but it was footnoted as an American poet in Anatomy of Healing Prayer, said that none of the singers has ever yet wholly lived his minstrelsy. I thought that was a wonderful expression. Imagine a wholly lived minstrelsy. And then give yourself permission not to wholly live your minstrelsy, whatever it is, but to explore what minstrelsies you can get up to. It feels like going to a Renaissance festival, I think, a wholly lived minstrelsy. What is it on your bucket list of gifts that you haven't yet expressed, or ways in which the gifts you are expressing could be more fully expressed? How can you allow your heart to be expressed in the world? What is it that you're here to do that you could express differently or more or better or more fully? How could you engage in life? So that's my question for today. In The Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes said, "Allow the voice of spirit to speak to the inner ear. We can so train our ears to listen to the divine harmony within, we shall reproduce its melody, rhythm, and beauty in all our ways." And I'm going to close with something else Ernest said in The Ideas of Power. O infinite beauty, diffused and infused, spilling itself over us and flowing through us in the majestic harmony of warmth and color and feeling, our minds are open to thy divine influx. O infinite sweetness beyond compare, surrender all littleness and all fear and all doubt, that the living fountain from the eternal river of life, flowing from the mind of God, shall renew our vigor, remake our strength, ennoble our being, heal our bodies and fortunes, and bring peace to our waiting hearts. In thy wisdom make us wise, in thy light give us light, and in thy joy shall we laugh as children playing on the shores of time, as the great ocean of eternity evermore flows and flows into our being. I'm so glad that Ernest shined his light so that I could absorb it and share it. And I just wish for all of us that the more light we give, the more light we have, and that we take this opportunity to engage in spring, in source, in love. And so it is.
So it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bravo.